Hey everyone, it's April 7th. I'm your host, Doc J, with your other host, JD, and you guys are listening to the Full Court Press podcast. Thanks so much for stopping by. All right, guys, we're really excited because first and foremost, the NBA season is finally coming to a close, and I'll tell you what, it has definitely been wild, especially if you guys have been watching. It's been very exciting, especially in the West, to kind of see where the seeding is kind of falling into place and where everyone is going to be. But what JD and I are really excited about is the fact that the 2023 NBA draft is about to take place. And this is something that he and I have been watching very closely really before the season even started. And what we're going to do today in our first episode of the Full Court Press podcast is we're going to give you guys a little bit of a mock draft lottery in terms of where we would select players. And JD is going to have the first pick, honored with the first pick. And I will take 2 and 3, and then we're going to alternate after that. By the way, the season officially ends, if I'm not mistaken, on Easter Sunday, which is also JD's birthday. So happy birthday, JD.
Hey, thank you so much.
Yeah, of course, of course. So JD, let me ask you, what do you think of this upcoming draft? Like, I know that I've received a lot of criticism from people because I've stated that I believe that this draft is so rich with talent that it's very reminiscent of the 1984 draft that had Hakeem, Jordan, Isaiah Thomas, John Stockton, Charles Barkley, multiple MVPs, multiple transcendent superstars that really helped kind of pave the way for basketball. But this draft is loaded, man. What do you think? What's your thoughts on it?
It's crazy. I mean, I think I've looked at every player in a lot of these mock drafts again and again. I've looked at their tape. I've looked at their makes. I've looked at their misses. And I think there's a ton of talent. I've seen a lot of people talking about it that, like, just like you, you know, it's actually interesting that you're getting criticized because people are talking about this being one of the best drafts in history, you know, maybe one of the best drafts of the decade. It's just absolutely nuts. There's
I absolutely agree.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, absolutely agree with you, man. Like, and that's what's so exciting to me about this is the fact that, in my opinion, you have potentially three number one picks, you know, when you really think about it. You have Victor Wembanyama, who has an incredible story in France, you know, and when you kind of look, Brian Windhorst actually went to France and did a very refined piece where he got to sit down and really get to know Victor Wembanyama. And so you have him coming out of France. And by the way, to our listeners, if you guys have not checked out Brian Windhorst's piece on ESPN, I would absolutely suggest that you do that because it is very educated. It's very intelligent. And I love Brian Windhorst because he's a very conservative writer in terms of how he follows the NBA. He's very intelligent. So you have Victor Wembanyama, you have Scoot Henderson. I remember hearing about Scoot in a podcast, I can't remember where, a few years ago when he was 16, though, and he was like ramping up so he could join the G League at 17. You know, this was a kid, essentially, legally playing with adults, like grown men in the G League. And his first year off of, I might be mistaken here, but I believe in 15 minutes of play, he was able to average 15, 5, and 5, which is remarkable. And then this year, he comes in and he puts up very similar numbers, but really shows those flashes of brilliance as an 19-year-old. I think he just turned 19, if I'm not mistaken. So Scoot is also someone who I think is just going to be absolutely brilliant. And I just read an article where Scoot talked about kind of what his goals are, you know, in terms of how he wants his NBA career to flesh out. And what really stood out to me was the fact that he was like, I want to be one of the best point guards ever to play the game. And I love that. It's like that kid has been putting in the work ever since he was little. You know, he joined a man's league when he was 17 years old, and like he understands the physicality of the G League. And I love that. And then you have guys like Brandon Miller too, who's the best player in college basketball. And normally, you know, historically, when you look at drafts, the best player in college basketball is normally like the number one pick, you know? So I think it's really amazing and very unique that this year, especially, you have three different guys from three different leagues who all really could compete for the number one spot if they were in a different year.
Yeah. And you know what? I might even say four. A lot of people are really high on Amen Thompson. You know, I've heard it. Amen Thompson as well. And the guy could very well be a stud. So I'm super excited to get into this, Doc.
I am too. All right. So with that said, like I said, you have the first pick. You have number one. And then I will take two and three. And we'll just kind of alternate from there.
Gotcha.
And I'm pretty sure I know who that number one pick is going to be for you.
Yeah. Yep. This is pretty unanimous. But with the first pick of the NBA 2023 draft, I would definitely be taking a guy by the name of Kyle Filipowski out of Duke. No, I'm just kidding. No, of course, we're going to be taking Victor Wembanyama. You know, he's listed at 7'4", 7'3", 7'5". Mm-hmm. We're really going to have to see when he comes into the NBA and they actually check. But the guy's a giant. He's a beast. And, you know, people have been doubting or, you know, touting him as, you know, one of the best prospects or maybe the best prospect since LeBron. I've heard others say that he is the best prospect in NBA history. Now, I think that is absolutely insane, you know, because it's just, I think that has very, very high expectations on somebody like him. But
I agree.
I think when people talk about that, you know, when they say, when people are talking about a number one pick as high as that, you know, saying he's one of the best prospects, there's going to be some hesitancy. There's going to be some doubters. There's going to be some people that are, you know, really looking under the microscope to see how he really is and what potential problems he can have. And I think some could be legitimate. I'd say, you know, a lot of people are hesitant about his size, if it's going to come with injuries. Some are talking even about his talents. And I kind of wanted to dive into both of them. I'd say with his height, and I guess I have to say this first, I think that he's going to be a generational talent. But, you know, with the hesitancy, there's a lot of seven-footers that don't really have a lot of longevity in their career. You know, they're injury-prone. They end their careers early. And I think that's the only thing that people, you know, can really be held back on this about, you know? They could be really afraid that he could get injured early. I mean, if you take a look at Chet Holmgren, he's got a similar build.
He got injured
early in the season. You know, hasn't even played a game yet. And he was taken number two. And so there's a little hesitancy around that. But, you know, I know that this guy is really focused on being healthy. I've heard that he's been doing calisthenics. He's been working with some really special physical trainers just on his ankles, on his health, on his stretching. You know, it's almost as if he's taking a different approach to, you know, being healthy, you know, trying to have that longevity in his career, which most NBA players probably don't. And maybe you're asking yourself, well, I'm sure a lot of these guys, you know, want to focus on their health. They have physical trainers. Maybe Anthony Davis, for example, has one of those. But I think Anthony Davis has been, you know, ridden with a lot of injuries, which makes it even easier to get injured later in the career. But I think this guy's starting really well. You know, he's starting early on, trying to keep that longevity. And I do think he is going to have it. And if you really take a look at him too, I think like France is behind him. Everybody wants to make sure that this guy comes out number one, comes out incredible. And I think he will. Another topic that people have been talking about is, you know, maybe when he's going against French people, you know, like the French league, he can destroy them. He can get a, you know, rack up the block, stuff like that. But if he's against real NBA players who are bigger, They're stronger. They're faster. Maybe people are going to, you know, doubt that he can do it, you know, compete at that level. But I think, you know, I think he ended this debate, at least like I would say he ended this debate when he came to the G League for a couple games, scored 2 30-point games and just absolutely dominated, you know. And I think that, you know, the G League might not be NBA talent, but there's definitely NBA players that were in there, and it's pretty darn close. And I think it's going to, you know, transition pretty seamlessly. What do you think, Doc?
Yeah, I think you're right about that. So I heard also from Brian Windhorst, hey babe, that he's actually currently working with Dirk's trainer, Dirk's old trainer as well. And the coach from France that he is working with all the time, really learning and developing from, is kind of like the Coach Popovich of France. Like, he has won 5 national titles. He's in charge of their national team for the Olympics. I mean, that coach helped Rudy Gobert get a silver medal in the Olympics, you know? Mm. So I think he does have, and something else I heard that was crazy also from Brian Windhorst, and I'm telling all of our listeners now, if you really want to get a good understanding on Victor Wembanyama, go read the piece or listen to Brian Windhorst's podcast, The Hoop Collective. He lays out his entire time he spent with Victor, really getting to know him, understanding where he's from, meeting his mother, learning about his life story. But this kid is getting 11 hours of sleep per day, which is mind-boggling to me. I can barely get 6 hours of sleep, let alone 11. But I think that you're absolutely right. I think the only thing that could derail his transcendence is going to be injury. And I really like the fact that he is the right team around him. It seems like what you said also, like, he has all of France behind him. I think they are fully aware of what they have in him. I mean, we watched that video not too long ago where I know I sent that to you. He missed his three and then got the putback dunk.
Putback dunk.
I've never seen anything like that. That's not even a real thing. Mm-hmm. You know, no one does that.
He's so coming from so far, and then he's able to bring it back and dunk.
So far away. And, oh, man, I can't wait to watch this kid play.
He probably has strides, you know, from running that's taller than me, if you think.
Oh,
that.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. At 7'4", 7'5", like, even 7'3", he's going to be the tallest player in the NBA. And I just can't wait to see him play. So I think, yeah, he has to be the number one pick. All right. So with my second pick, I think this one – to me, this one's a no-brainer, but I know that there's been a lot of up and down, I guess, is the best way to say it, in terms of who you would take over who. But for me, I would absolutely take Scoot Henderson without hesitation. I think that Scoot, like I said, when I first heard about Scoot, he was a 16-year-old working on his game and just barely entering the G League. He joined when he was 17, and as a 17-year-old at 6'2", was playing against full-grown men. And the physicality of the G League, I think, can be very underrated, because a lot of these guys are competing to either try to get into the NBA, you know, because they used to play in the NBA, or they're undrafted guys who are still trying to make a name for themselves. But the G League can be very, very physical. And those guys can play. They're all trying to get that spot. So for Scoot to come in as a 17-year-old and understand the mechanics of the game and not just play the game at a very physical level, but have the explosive athleticism needed to, like, really make highlight reels, accompanied with the court vision he has, I think Scoot's going to be fantastic. I think what Scoot has to do, kind of like what Vic has to do, is he needs to make sure that he doesn't get hurt, you know? And yeah. I know he had a concussion at the beginning of the year, which was kind of scary. But he has since shut himself down as well, which I think might hurt his draft stock a little bit. But I think in terms of like the kind of potential he has as a player, Scoot has to be the unanimous number two. Like he just has to be. Like you can teach a guy how to shoot. Like his shooting mechanics, granted, aren't the best at the moment, but he has insane athleticism. He has some of the best court vision I think I've ever seen from a prospect. And you can teach guys how to shoot. You can sit down with guys who, you know, like with Chris Brickley, for example, who's a great skills trainer, one of the best skills trainers in the world. He works with James Harden and Donovan Mitchell and Jimmy Butler. He's a guy, like, if you get one of these good skills trainers and you sit Scoot down, you're going to be able to, like, he'll learn how to shoot. You can learn how to shoot. I mean, look at Lonzo Ball is a great example, in my opinion. When Lonzo first came into the league, Lonzo had terrible shooting mechanics, but he's learned since then. And, you know, like, God sends his prayers, and so do I, because I would love to see Lonzo come back and play for the Bulls because they desperately need him. But Lonzo evolved, and a lot of shooters you can learn how to shoot. What you can't learn is heart, determination, and athleticism. That has to already be there. And I think Scoot has all of those things in place, and I think that he can learn and he'll develop and become a better shooter as time goes on. For my number three pick, I also think this one's kind of a no-brainer. I'm obviously going to go with Brandon Miller. So at the beginning of the season, I made the comment to you in our little family group text too. I said, I think Brandon Miller is the best shooting forward in college basketball. And he did not disappoint. Like, Brandon Miller is exactly that. And he's actually more than that. He's the best player in college basketball. You know, he had a pretty poor performance. I think it was in, the Elite Eight, where he had 0 points and Alabama got bounced during March Madness. But Brandon Miller at 6'8 is a kind of guy who understands how to handle the rock. He has good playmaking. He's a natural scorer. Some of the issues I was kind of worried about early on in the season was him really getting to the basket. I was like, can this kid absorb contact and still get to where he needs to and get those buckets? But he since then has proven that he can. So I think that Brandon Miller is going to develop into a very transcendent player. Obviously, he was wrapped up in some legal issues that are very unfortunate. But in terms of his basketball potential, and that's what I want to talk about here. I'm not trying to advocate for what happened or the legality behind the situation he was involved in. You know, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a police officer. I'm also not going to cast stones at someone who was, in my opinion, in the wrong place at the wrong time. That doesn't have to be anyone else's opinion. That's just my own. I'm just talking about basketball potential. I think Brandon Miller easily could be a number one pick in another draft class, and same with Scoot Henderson. So my third pick, I will definitely be taking the shooting forward, power forward from Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, I like Brandon Miller as well. I had him also at my number three. I think that, you know, he's an incredible player. I think he was the best player in college basketball, which says a lot. I know he had a historically bad March Madness. Where he shot something like 8 for 48 or 8 for 50. It was something terrible.
It was awful.
You know, I like to look at, you know, what he did during the season. I know a lot of the freshmen coming into the draft had some pretty bad March Madness plays. Almost all of them, yeah. I wouldn't say otherwise to that. I mean, there were a few that really stuck out and they rose in the ranks, but I definitely would still take Brandon Miller. He kind of reminds me of a Paul George-esque player. Maybe he could develop into that. We'll see.
I think so too.
I would say for my number four, this might come as a surprise to some people, but I am taking Asar Thompson of the Overtime Elite. Now, the reason I'm taking Asar, you know, I think a lot of people are saying, you know, the Thompson twins, they're in most of the top five of the mock drafts of, you know, what analysts are saying or what they're seeing. But I would say earlier in the year, Asar was, you know, maybe a late lottery pick. I saw him around there and he really rose in the ranks. I think he rose in the ranks because he really developed as a player this year. If you kind of notice, he got a better jump shot. He became, you know, kind of a wing player for Overtime Elite as Amen Thompson was kind of the primary ball handler. And the guy really thrived. I mean, he's 6'7". He's, you know, kind of touted as a shooting guard, maybe even like a shooting forward. But I see this guy as a point guard. He can really play the point. He's a great passer. He's got great vision. And he might not have, you know, like incredible athleticism as Amen Thompson, as they say that he has. But I think he's really good athletically. You know, he's like, I think he's probably a cut above the rest in a lot of these first rounders. So the guy's a stud. Not only that, he, you know, he didn't have the best shooting percentage overall. It wasn't like abysmal, but it wasn't the best. But, you know, he hit it where it counted, you know, in the Overtime Elite, when they were in the finals, when they were doing the playoffs, he was shooting like 40%. He was just absolutely dominating, you know, 40% from the three, he was shooting, you know, over 50% field goal. The guy was really a stud. And, you know, he was made the MVP of that league. And so I really think that, like, people might be sleeping on this guy, even though, you know, he might be picked at like 5 or 6. I think he really has a lot of potential in the league. He has shown that he, you know, has the motivation to improve. You know, like you were saying, maybe Scoot has that as well. Scoot could really develop his jump shot. I think maybe a lot of these guys, they've got some really raw potential for athleticism. Maybe not the best, you know, in scoring right now, but they can really grow into that. I think that is an area of concern for me. I think there's a lot of people that are always drafted high that end up, you know, saying, okay, this guy's got raw potential. He can turn into something. I think Asar has already shown that he has the determination to really develop his game. You know, he rose basically in every stat. And if you look at his stats, the guy's averaging more than what Amen Thompson was. You know, he's averaging a couple points more, more rebounds, same amount of assists, higher field goal percentage. I think that just really shows something, you know, and he's not even the primary ball handler. So I'm taking this guy number 4. I know it might be a crazy claim, but I think he might be better than Amen Thompson.
I don't think that's crazy at all. I think that you're right on the money for that, because when you look at the stats too, Asar is the better defender. And I agree with you. I think that he's a point guard who is playing off the ball and can play and is comfortable playing a 1-3, where Amen is comfortable playing 1 and would have to almost learn and adjust his game to play the 2 as well. But one of the big criticisms coming into this season was, well, the Thompson twins are super athletic, but they can't shoot. And only one of them improved his numbers, and that was Asar. So I don't think you're far off the money for that, personally. Like, I'm not saying Amen's going to be a dud. He could be. But I think Asar has proven that he is the more developed player. And, I mean, I think you could plug Asar in. Like I said, 1-3. I think you're right on the money with that, man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that leaves me number 5. Oh, man.
Who are you taking?
Well, I was kind of banking on trying to take Asar 5. But I'm going to have to go with Amen at number 5. Because I still believe that these kids have the potential to be great. There's the athleticism, which in my opinion is probably virtually identical because they're identical twins. They have the same kind of court vision. And I think Amen could, like I said, you can learn how to shoot, but you can't learn determination. You can't learn athleticism. Those are things that you have to have in place and you have to build off of. I think Amen has a fantastic foundation. And he is going to be something special if he chooses to be. So what I would like to see from him is taking that criticism kind of on the chin the way his brother did before the season started. Because like I said, only one of their numbers improved and it was Asar's. Soar obviously looked at the criticism, and I think all these players do. Like, that's just kind of what happens. And Soar said, okay, yeah, like, you're right. I really can't shoot as well as I should be able to. And he went and he got better. And Amen just hasn't done that this year. But with that said, I think it would be crazy to not snatch up Amen at five. Mm-hmm. And so I would definitely still take him because I think all the skills are still there. I think he has brilliant court vision. He's a massive point guard. He has insane athleticism. And, you know, if we want to compare him to someone, I mean, Ja Morant, when he first came into the league, was not a very good shooter whatsoever, you know? But what could Ja do? Well, he could get downhill on you, and he had great court vision, and he had insane athleticism. So if we were to add another 5 inches, or I think it's 5 inches, I think Ja is 6'2 or 6'3, mm-hmm. you add that to a player of his caliber, I mean, that's an insane point guard of the future for any team who takes him. So we're going to snatch up Amen with pick number five.
You know, I'd say something about Amen. If he really improves his jump shot, his shooting overall, he can really turn into a super threat. And,
oh yeah,
you know, I've definitely heard the comparison with Ja Morant, like he's a 6'7 Ja Morant or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'd put him there quite yet, but I think he has potential to turn into that. And that's why you want to take somebody like him as high as that, as high as number three, number four, number five. And you know what? I think this guy has maybe the most potential of anybody in this draft. I think that he could really turn, he could maybe turn into the best player in the draft. It might be crazy to say.
Not over
because
Victor.
I think,
no way,
I think his shooting percentage is so awful. In fact,
it
you know,
it's bad.
With somebody like Ja Morant, he was shooting a little over 30% from three when he came in to the draft, you know, and you would love that if that was on Amen Thompson. You'd be ecstatic if he's shooting that. So he's shooting terribly. He was just banking completely on his athleticism, and he was destroying people that maybe some people might say are, you know, high schoolers, some people that aren't even like college level players. So we're going to have to see how well he really transitions. But I have heard that, you know, he's played with some NBA players. They've done some pickup games and he's demolished. So I think it's a safe pick. I think, you know, he can really turn into something special. You know, like you said, he has to have the motivation to develop that jump shot, and he'll probably become an all-star if he does that. With the next pick, with the number six pick, I'm going to be taking Jairus Walker.
Okay.
Now, Jairus Walker is an interesting one for me. He's coming out of Houston. They were a great team. He was a freshman on kind of an older team, and he did really well. You know, he was one of the primary ball handlers. He had some good court vision, although, you know, some people might be skeptical about that. He's a 6'8 guy. He has something like 240 pounds on him, which is huge. You know, he's almost like a linebacker coming into the NBA.
Yeah, he's gigantic.
You know, he's going to be playing the power forward at 6'8". I was maybe a little concerned. Maybe he's on the smaller side, but, you know, there's people like Julius Randle who are great at that position. And he has been compared to a Julius Randle that, you know, is really good on defense. And, Doc, the thing with me is that when we're talking about, you know, incredible defenders, I just hope that, like, you have some sort of offensive game. You know, I look at people that have come into the draft that, okay, this guy is touted as, you know, a really good defender. He's going to develop his jump shot. And, you know, people, they end up not doing it sometimes. And with Jairus, he did. He shot something around 40% from the three, which is really good. Although I think sometimes you can't really look into that too much. I think at the start of the season, he was shooting really well. And at the end, he was shooting pretty poor. His free throw percentage is in something like the 60s. I think that's a good indicator if they really have a nice touch, if they're going to be shooting well. And so I'm a little skeptical about him. But if I had the choice, if I had the sixth pick, I'm probably going to be taking him with, you know, the other people that have already been taken, because I think he does have potential to be something great. And I do like the athleticism. I do like the defense that he has. I think the guy, you know, I was kind of ragging on defense, but I do like that he can come in and be a pretty good defender, know where he's supposed to be at the right time. And he has, you know, I think he can be a great role player in, like, you know, maybe not the primary ball handler. He could be a number two, and he maybe could develop into the primary ball handler. But, I mean, he showed that with Houston, who was, you know, an older team. They're pretty good, and he came in, and he just, you know, he did really well.
Yeah, something I really like about Jairus, too, is the fact that I think that he has insane lateral movement and really active hands. And he's the kind of guy, at least in my opinion, who is going to go to the NBA and just be able to defend NBA players right off the bat. I think he's the best defender in college basketball, like bar none. I think it's him, and I think it's Cason Wallace, and then I think it's everyone else.
What about Cason?
Cason's fantastic, especially for being a guard. But I think Jairus is the guy in terms of being like, he'll just get up in your area and in your space, and he will put the full court press on you. Mm-hmm. And like, that's something I really like about him. Like, I think that, you know, if Portland could get that kid, that would change their entire franchise, because like, they just can't defend to save their lives, but they have all the offensive capabilities in the world. If you could put Jairus next, I'm saying that right? Jairus Walker.
I've heard Jairus, Jairus.
JW. If you can get JW next to Damian Lillard, that's a completely different team. And I would love to see him on that team, because I think that he would really change the outcome of their franchise for a, you know, like a franchise, a club right now that's kind of floundering. They have no idea what they're going to do. So good pick. Good pick. All right, let's see. At number seven, this one's kind of tricky for me, but I think I'm going to go with Anthony Black. I have been really high on Anthony since before the season started. I have. I'm an Anthony Black guy. I like the fact that he's 6'7". He can play the 1-3. He became the primary ball handler for Arkansas. And he actually played more minutes in college basketball than any other kid. He was averaging 35.4 minutes per game while everyone else was somewhere in the 20s. So the kid can grind, and he just wants to play and he wants to win. And he does have a couple flaws in terms of shooting like that, but that's also something that we've talked about. Like, you can work on shooting. You can get better at shooting. What he has, though, is pretty solid defensive capabilities. He's huge for the point guard position, just like the Thompson twins. So, I mean, can you imagine him locking down like a 6'2", even a 6'5 guy? He's going to be bigger than that. And being 6'5", I mean, if you're 6'5 and you play the one or the two, you're huge. You know, you're so we're talking about a guy who's literally gigantic, who can play the point guard position, who can lock down the 1-3. He has great court vision, and he wants to win. And that's what I love about him. He's a competitor, and he can work on shooting. All these kids can work on shooting. And while most of the freshmen had poor performances during March Madness, his last game, which was against, who was that? I know they beat Arkansas. I can't remember who they played after that, though. Or they beat Kansas, excuse me. But I remember his last game, like, he put up, it might, I can't remember who it was exactly, but he put up 20 points. Like, so he is a guy who's not afraid of, you know, like the big spotlight. He tried to will his team to win. He grinds. He plays more minutes than anyone else in college ball. And everything else can come and develop later. You know, like, he's the kind of guy who I believe could go to an NBA team right now and positively affect their outcome just because of his size and his ability to really not just see the floor as a floor general, but he can get downhill, he can absorb contact, and he can get to the bucket. Like, he's great with that. So Anthony Black, to me, is a no-brainer. I love this guy. I've been high on him since day one, so I'm snagging him with my seventh pick.
Awesome. You know, I like Anthony Black as well. I had him going number 9 in my mock, but I do think that he's probably going to rise into the 8 or 7. I think the guy, he reminds me a lot of Josh Giddey, who's a big guy, has really good feel for the game, really good court vision. Like you were mentioning, I think an area of concern is his shooting. Maybe people aren't going to, you know, let him drive to the basket as much in the NBA. They'll allow him to shoot the three. We'll just have to see how that goes. But he seems like a good defender, seems like a good player. With the eighth pick in this NBA mock draft, and who I had as my first guard, my first college guard. And this is going to, this potentially another surprise. I'm looking at raw potential here. I think this guy's going to go later in the draft, but I think he can turn into a superstar. I'm taking Keontae George.
All right.
Okay. So I'm going to just.
Kid from Baylor.
Yep. Kid from Baylor. He's 6'4". He's listed at 185, but he was much heavier. I think it was, you know, something like 220. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh,
I'm going to just list the area of concerns for him right away. He had a great start to the season. In fact, people had him in, you know, typical mock drafts as high as 7 at one point. He started low. I saw him in high school. I loved him. I thought he was going to be incredible. And so I wanted him right from the gate. And then he slowly rose. He rose all the way to maybe, you know, 8, 7. And then he dropped. You know, he started to drop during March Madness and towards the end because he was just not shooting very well. And I would say, you know, I watched his final game in March Madness. He looked like he didn't really want to be there. It looks like he wasn't trying as much. And so you're probably asking, why are you taking this guy so high? I think that he just has a ton of raw potential. I think he has the prettiest shot in college right now. And probably
he has great mechanics.
I think he was a little heavier, and I don't think he wanted to be. I just heard that he was, you know, he said he was around 220 during the end of the season, and he has dropped 15 pounds or maybe 10 pounds already. Okay. And so he's going to be much quicker, much more athletic. People are seeing him, you know, right now in training camps, and they're saying he's looking pretty good and that he's probably going to go higher than, you know, what some mocks have him right now at, you know, something 13, 14. I see him probably going in the top 10. I would take him as my first college guard just because he's got really good feel for the game, in my opinion. I think he's a good passer. I don't know if a lot of people really think that, but I do. He was probably more of a shooting guard when he came to Baylor. He was a primary ball handler as well, though. And that's a lot for an 18-year-old that's coming into college, you know, playing with bigger guys too. If he can maybe start off maybe at the 2 or 3 and develop into a 1, I think he's going to turn into an all-star. I think he could potentially be another guard, you know, like Amen, I was saying, who could be one of the best. I think Keontae could be one of the best guards in the draft, maybe the best. We'll have to see. And I know that's a hot take, but I really like this guy. I'm high on him, and I think he's got a good future.
We're all about hot takes here, all about it. Because yeah, I've watched a lot of his highlights too and caught a couple games from Baylor and
looks a little bit like really, Jamal Murray.
You know, he reminds me of like a younger, more athletic, like Jordan Clarkson, because Jordan Clarkson will put up these circus shots where it's like you would never think that would work in an NBA setting, but Jordan Clarkson somehow makes it work, and Keontae George does things like that. He's able to somehow make this, like, he'll be falling on his back, getting fouled, like putting up some crazy shot, and it's like there's no way that's going in, and then it goes in and you're like, this kid, man, like, he has a good feel for his shot. I think he also has excellent mechanics. I love Keontae George, man. I was gonna pick him next. You're cutting me off here. Yeah, all right, let's see, number 9. Oh man, okay, I have 3 guys that I really want to take here at 9. And I think I'm going to, you know, I'm probably going to take Nick Smith Jr., to be honest. I think Nick Smith has had a very turbulent beginning to, you know, his first season. Like, he got hurt. He had to have a couple surgeries. He didn't really get to play as much as he wanted to, so he didn't really get to fit into the Arkansas system the same way Anthony Black did. But Nick Smith came out of high school averaging 25, 7, and 7. He was a 5-star prospect. I think that he has the absolute potential to be something fantastic. And my favorite thing about him is when they beat Kansas, he probably had one of the worst games he played like all year, you know? Mm-hmm. But he was crying. He was just tears of joy because he didn't care about his stats. He just wanted to win. And I like guys like that. That means something to me because, you know, basketball at its core, like it's a team sport. You know, it's always been a team sport. You want to try to get your numbers, but like if you're negatively affecting your team, what's the point of that? And so to see a kid as young as Nick Smith, who had a terrible start to the season, like let's just call it how it is. Like it was awful. Like he couldn't even get on the floor. And for him to just celebrate with his teammates and be like, I wanted to win this game so bad. And not even talk about his shortcomings on the floor, on the court. He was like, it doesn't even matter. We won. I just want to win. Those are the kind of players that are going to get better. Those mm-hmm. are the kind of guys who go into the offseason and they look at themselves with a sense of maturity and they say, okay, where can I improve? Those are like your Donovan Mitchell kind of players, in my opinion. Like one of the reasons Donovan is so great is because he locks himself in the gym every single offseason. And you and I we're from Utah, so we're Jazz fans by default. But that's always been my favorite thing about Donovan. Like Donovan, even amidst all the trade rumors and this and that, is he going to New York or what's going on? What did Donovan do? He went back to New York. He worked with Chris Brickley the entire offseason. He never addressed any of the rumors. He just put his head down and he started to grind because he knew no matter where he went, he was going to make a statement for that team. I think that Nick Smith Jr. is that kind of player. I think that every single offseason, Nick Smith is going to get better and better and better. And I think that he has the potential and the size to be someone almost akin to like a Devin Booker. Now, he might not be... I know. How's that for a hot take? Devin Booker is deadly from the mid-range, and I think Nick Smith has an incredible mid-range game. And so I could see him really becoming that go-to guy for a team as long as he develops properly, especially with that mid-range and like his will to just want to win and compete. That's what you want in guys. You want guys to be like that. And like he really showed that to me, like I said, full circle, when he just had a terrible game against Arkansas, but he was so celebratory in his team's success and upsetting that higher seed because he just wants to win. To me, that's a no-brainer. Give me kids like that any day of the week because to me, those are going to be the kids who run the NBA one day. So yeah. I'll take Nick Smith at 9.
I really like Nick Smith. In fact, I would take him. I think I had him at number 8. And so, we're kind of similar on him. At the start of the year, the guy was, you know, as high as number 3 or 4 because he was dominating in high school. Yeah, and yes, he did have a slow start, but the guy got injured. And I think a lot of people kind of forget about that. And he's been, you know, he had some moments of stardom in college. He had a couple of nights where he was scoring over 20
points. Put it together.
Mm-hmm. He looked like he was, really putting it together. Looks like he was healing up. And then he really struggled in March Madness. But I really like what you said. I couldn't agree more. I mean, I'm pretty sure he was crying after they beat Kansas. Even though he struggled, he was just so happy that him and his boys got through. And I couldn't agree more. I think that shows that the guy really wants to win, that he's going to be a winner. And he reminds me a lot of Jordan Clarkson. I mean, he's got a really good floater. Mm-hmm. When he gets, about 10, 15 feet from the rim, he can really shoot it. He can really score. And I know that people have been saying that he hasn't been the greatest finisher at the rim. I think he's going to develop and he'll be fine. And I haven't really seen that problem too much. I think he can get to the rim fine. It's just he's been settling for floaters, but he drains the floaters. So I think he'll be good. He reminds me a little bit of Jordan Poole as well. He could develop into something like that. And so I like him. I would have taken him as well. For the 10th pick, I think we're at 10.
And this,
is that right?
Before I cut you off too, this will probably be our last pick for this podcast just because we're already skyrocketing over 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's just because we have so much knowledge though in terms of ball. So take your last pick, my man.
For the final pick, I am going to be taking Taylor Hendricks. Taylor Hendricks, the power forward out of UCF. Mm-hmm. Guy's 6'9", he's around 210 pounds. He's I'd say he's a little lanky, but the guy, I think if I recall, he was shooting 50, 40, 80, which is absolutely stellar. In fact, I think this guy, you know, you could probably put him at the 3, the 4, and the 5. He's a good defender. Mm-hmm. He can shoot the ball well. He's, from what I've watched, maybe some areas of concern is that he's not the best ball handler, which is fine. You know, he's 6'9". But right. He's also not the best at creating his own shots. I don't know if I necessarily saw that. I saw some good drives from him, some good shot creation. But those could be some areas of concern. I do really like the fact that he's just a lethal scorer. I mean, the fact that he's 50, 40, 80, and, you know, shooting 80% from free throw, I think he has a great touch, great feel of the game. He actually reminds me a little bit of Brandon Miller, you know, that style mm-hmm. of play. In fact, I could see him potentially being as good as somebody like that, you know? And I'm surprised he's not really being taken higher. A lot of people are high on him now because, you know, he came into March Madness and really obliterated. But I think he could be a really good piece for a team.
Yeah, I really like Kendricks myself. So I had him with my next pick. But, you know, like what you're saying, he's big. He can move. And like he'll learn. A lot of these guys, they'll learn how to play NBA ball. You know, they'll learn how to get their own shots. They'll learn how to develop things like that. And they'll figure it out. But for a guy who's able to move and have the hops and athleticism and be that size, like Taylor Hendricks is something special. He really is. He really is. So, hey, with that said, thanks so much for listening, guys. Once again, this is JD and Doc J. You were listening to the Full Court Press podcast, and we will see you next time. Thanks so much.